we've been dabbling organically. Oh, sure. Yeah. Which is homemade wine in the bottle, basically.
I remember that's the name of it. Yeah. It started like that. Who's that? Who? Sancho Lagoon.
To your very best health. Sancho Lagoon.
To your very best health.
Oh, it's Gaelic. I thought it was a person.
It's a Gaelic toast. Yeah. Hey, what is this, Bess?
Now we have an Irish toast with an English beer.
Yeah,
this is good.
Yeah.
Well, essentially, we'll just go back and forth.
Right. All right.
Okay. But I have some remarks before that. Basically, I don't know if everybody here knows, but I'm going to Chicago next weekend. For about a week. And the reason why is twofold. One, there's a big show at the Art Institute, a Claude Monet show. It's supposed to be the biggest ever mounted in this country.
No wonder you're going.
That's one part. The other part is that the last time I was out there, I went to a poetry reading and I hooked up with this guy named Leonard. Nice guy.
Oh, you told me about this story, but I know you're going to Chicago this weekend.
Yeah. I hooked up with this guy named Leonard, who's a really nice guy, and he seems to know the poetry scene in Chicago pretty well. And I called him up. I sent him some centipedes after I came back from my trip. And then I called him up recently, and I said to him, I'm coming out to Chicago, would you like to get together? And he said, sure. He even said that he's been trying to get a poetry reading on a regular basis going at this Romanian restaurant in Chicago. And he said that on the Saturday evening when I visit next Saturday night, he's going to get together a literary gathering for my visit. He's going to get together
really
some people
deep.
He knows.
Really.
So, I mean, that was totally unexpected. The reason I called him is because this Monet show is hard to get tickets for. And I was going to ask him if he could buy me a ticket. I was going to pay him back. And it turns out he's a member of this museum, so he thought he could get me tickets that way. And then we talked on a little more, and he made this offer about having a literary gathering at this restaurant. He also told me he knows all the good 4 a.m. bars in Chicago, so I'm going to be up till 4 a.m. drinking in Chicago next weekend. So it's a two-pronged thing.
Face yourself for drinking until 4 a.m.
Last time I drank till 4 a.m. I was drinking rum and cokes. I lasted until about 3:30.
How many brothers here?
I met him for a night, but he bought me booze. I'm not going to rely on him for lodging. I'm going to stay in the hostel I stayed in the last time. The other thing is, Rick Amonte has recently met this guy named Dean, and it appears that this fellow is from Texas, he's about 23, 24, and he's up at Harvard studying philosophy, and he wants to have some kind of literary gathering on some kind of regular basis, so it's the next time they do it, I'm going to show up and see what it's all about. But they had
Rainbow down here.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Philosophy branch of the jungle.
Where is Rick right now?
What?
Where's Rick live?
He lives in Everett, Mass. Which is
so where the meeting's going to be up in Mass?
This guy lives in a town called Somerville, which is next to Cambridge. Well,
I was curious.
Well, I'm generating all of this information to make a point that I think that I realized tonight while I was waiting for Jim to come and get me that these things of this kind have been happening lately some at my doing, some just things I've been, you know, hearing about. And the point I want to make is that I think that if things go well over the course of time, the Jellicoe Guild is going to be enhanced by new personages from other places. It's like...
We're already interested in...
Well, exactly. But I want to... Well, the point is I want to do more. But it takes time to make connections. Because you don't just want to bring anybody to a meeting like this.
They come with time.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to bring people that you have checked out, that are cool, they're going to have a good time, you want people to show up and have a good time. So, what? Yeah. So, anyway, I've been... I've been doing these things, and I haven't really detailed them very much because they're still sort of in transit, but I realize maybe I should, since now some of them are appearing to come to fruition, that... I mean, things have kind of been the way they've been here for, you know, a while, but bringing down Rick was sort of a beginning of something different.
And, what's his name, Yoshi?
And Yoshi.
Let's do it.
Hey, you hear about the Pope and the crossword puzzle?
What about Pope and the crossword puzzle?
Well, didn't hear that one?
Nope.
Well, you understand, Pope was like, he was... I had a lot of days sitting down with the crown royal on the rocks in the Pope chair. And the Pope chair is getting lots of support. It's a regular chair back in about 69. And he's doing a crossword puzzle, relaxed, he's got a little whiskey, and says to his aide next to him, come on, get a drink of yourself. And he goes, all right, so I need to drink. He says, shit. And then the aide looks up and says, Your Eminence, you have to go now? And the Pope goes, no, I already did that. He goes, I need to find a four-letter word for a loose woman and a tramp. Trumpet, harlot, whore. And the guy goes, a four-letter word? And the Pope goes, yeah, the last three letters are U-N-T.
U-N-T.
And the Pope goes, I can't figure this out at all. And he goes, I know. And the gay goes, yeah, aunt. And the Pope goes, oh, yeah, you're right. Let me have the eraser.
Maybe it's a delivery.
I didn't get it.
Well,
I didn't get it.
All right, now I didn't get it.
Okay. I have a little piece. And a small bit of literature. I got a small bit of literature and a small poem, both from recent. This is a scene George and Margaret Brownstone.
Who?
George and Margaret Brownstone.
Who?
Alright. George Brownstone, this is part of my own, you know, I'm going board. George Brownstone is the balding, kind of balding, bemused economics professor, which kind of epitomizes the man. And he's a little bit defecated, but he's an interesting fellow. And has a sense of humor. And his wife is a little bit defecated in general, which means a little, well, I guess if you have to come out and say it, I guess you'd say shallow. But, no, it's a different use. It's a different use of the word that. It's a different use of the defecated. And probably one I invented. Boolstra has brought that up. I have a way of inventing things. And Margaret Brownstone is kind of like the living persona of the 60s Trotskyist movement, late 60s Trotskyist movement. She's kind of like a latter-day California, hey, hippie Trotskyist, whatever it is, in her mid-40s. And they're married, and that's the story. George and Margaret Brownstone shared a table at the corner cafe, sipping beer and wine, respectively, and contemplating the universe. You think
working on getting old, Margaret, said George, with a puff of the pipe. Of course not, dear, said Margaret with a sip. Actually, George, you were old all along. Thank you very much, Margaret, said George. Now, I'm kidding, said Margaret with a giggle. The G&P, stocks, bonds, what does it all matter, said George. Isn't that what I've been telling you since we've met? Since we've met, darling, said Margaret. Well, I guess so, George said. I'll set you too, said Jack. Fill me up, said George. My younger colleagues say I'm a democratic dinosaur, said George. What do they know about economics anyway? That's right, said Margaret. Besides, honey, you would have made a fine dinosaur. There you go again, Margaret, said George. Now. You're just fine, said Margaret. It's just this country that needs change. Peace and love, huh, said George. Yeah, said Margaret, with a splash of Tabasco on top. Dream on, hon, said George. I will, said Margaret. Then the two resumed meditating as Jack puffed to a Red Sox game, leaving enough smoke in the joint to draw the fire wards. The end. And I'll reach you myself.
That was a bit snappy dialogue.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
That was a little scene. Yeah.
Sides, dear, you would have made a good dose.
First of its kind I've written in a while. Yep.
I have a story that I meant to excite you tonight, but
okay. I got a little poem.
Go ahead. You might want to read yours first.
Big blue pumas will get you. Yeah. We'll find out.
Big
blue pumas. All right. This is a poem. This is a poem I wrote today.
Unbelievable.
I wrote this. Wrote that a couple weeks ago. I wrote this today. For what it's worth.
Ray asked for more.
Or literature. Okay. I watch the cuckoo clock, it's time in my veins. I forgot to wear my watch today. I have slipped the thought in like a knuckleball. And I sit and I wait for the news. The news is not as it is now, and yet it always will be. There are epitaphs and memoriams piling up on my table, but my heroes, I think, are just as much with me as ever. Future generations are wearing my old young man's walking shoes. So where's this tune I'm whistling? I'm sorry, I'll say it differently. So where's this tune I'm whistling? Still looking. Napkins, what we put with.
Yeah.
Heads right on something small. That's my current. And I think that we should probably move on from that.
Okay.
It's current reading.
Okay, the first of the three long things I intend to read
is
the first part of my summer story. Video part. It's a three-part story, and I'm going to read part one. Three and a third revelations per minute, a new fiction. Begins with three epigraphs. First one is, a work of art is good if it is arisen out of necessity. Rainer Maria Rilke, Letter to Franz Xaver Kappes, dated Paris, February 7th, 1903. Second one, for his spirit was afraid of solitude and darkness, and, like all men in this land, his soul was drawn by the small, hard blaze of incandescence, which somehow pitifully and terribly suggests the fear and loneliness in men's souls, the small, hard assurances of manufactured light, which they have gathered as some beacon of comfort and security against a dark, too vast and terrible, and earth too savage in its rudeness, space, and emptiness for the spirit and strength of men. It's Thomas Wolfe of Time and the River, 1935. And lastly, it's good to get high and never come down. Tom Petty, 1994. Okay. Part 1. And loss. Could be somehow that if I filled a million white pages with black ink, curved words, pink, thick words, perfect elegies found in my heart's lost chambers after I opened them with bald fists, I would receive back a drop of a go, fill chunks of lined paper, confess to the innocences and sins of my time, seek to explain, defend my ears, smashing coldnesses to the weak and the individual, rise up high on thick black waves of spent ink, tell all I know, guess what I do not, all for a moment, a million pages for each moment, for that night I sped, biking, hands floating like wind-whipped moons, down that long hill, heading home, daring every pebble in my path to take me out, daring, daring, daring. That moment when I drizzled and passed, walked tiptoe down the length of that low cement wall, separating museum lawn from sidewalk, on my way, 17 years old and sorrowfully constant, going to my library in the sun, so many visits, escaping fucked up adolescence high school, and familia melancholia both, sitting with little miracles, she miracle, as we created wonder tales and sung them, Glit Child, Alice, Beatrice, Dorothy, Elizabeth, Mary Muse, oh, for the grasp of your hand, for a view of that sky, that meaningful sky, it was ours, tell me not otherwise, glit moments, leaping, I am a child, hands grasping for long football toss, pulling it in and never forgetting this, never, even when I returned to the grounds of my childhood and found them strange and polite, breasts I caressed but could never call home, million hour paper-rooted mornings, Dad, could you deliver the paper to that house up on the hill, they want it in the back door. Years later, I stood before the hugest tree in that backyard, looked up to the sky beyond, and youthfully addressed God, weakly, weakly. Do you know how much I would give to go back? If I could know that life is revisitation to this, place is gone to me now, I would. If I could know that death is revisitation to this, place is gone to me now, I would kill myself now for nothing that is to come will ever match the deafening past of what is gone. Nothing to come will ever be to me what was to me. I am writing this now not to beg any reader or no reader or every reader to grant me my wish or fucking commiserate. No, I am writing this to me because I was there in those tortured wandering moments, and I thought if I could only kiss a girl or suck a breast or fuck a cunt or become rich or turn 8 years old or sleep for long enough, I could be happy. I am writing this because I must remind I that writing is all I have left, and so I must cling to her as there's not else to cling to. I'm going to tell a very long story here, and I'm going to go ascending for those unseen places every man and woman who's ever licked pen, paper with pen have sought. And unlike most of my day, I haven't put a price tag on my notebooks, nor have I been a half-assed commitment to this greatest of devotions. What matters here is that I will depend on this story, even as it is penned into being by me. Pen lovely, paper lovely, me as unlovely as aught. But not totally. Just a bit is golden. Shines from lost, past, to here and now. I love you all. 1. Do you understand how tenuous, how fragile is the world in which you live, Richard James Americus? Do you? I'm all stands between you and oblivion. Me. Not much me. Me you don't like. That's all. The story begins Thanksgiving Day 1994. And it's long. And it's complicated. Will it go its full length? Will it come to its finish? I don't know. No story, no journey can be completely certain of coming to an end, desired or other. Just don't know. Do you understand this tenuousness, this fragility, Richard James Americus? No, I don't think so. Good. Revelations cannot begin until ignorance is admitted. You are a golden chalice. You are empty. You know this. Time to begin the slow pour. You will begin your descent now. Having no path heretofore, you cannot stray from it. Having never been focused enough to seek out its base, there is no sunny hill beckoning you to climb it. no leopard, no lion, no lupa. Earth, air, fire, water. Four basic elements of existence, so the ancients after Empedocles believed. These shall participate in your journey. Hell, halfway, heaven. 33 1/3 revelations per minute. Thanksgiving Day 1994. Begin. 2. The story begins on Thanksgiving Day 1994 because it was on that day that I began to realize that what, who had most penetrated the shaded doors of my heart was gone. She who taught me and defined thoroughly the essence I sought when I sought love, gone, and for the first time in her still young life, I didn't know where she was. Didn't know if she slept under safe eaves, or really eaves at all. Dearest heart, where are you? You did nothing to deserve banishment from your home, to become a subject I was forbidden to speak about, one whom I was told not to buy a Christmas gift for. In the darkest lashings of my helpless time, you were my Christmas gift. Is this fiction, then? Is there a tale here to be discovered? The answer lies in the very nature of the being. Once I penned a story moved by deeply stirred romance. Once I was shaken to fill pages with goodbye. Another time because I was forging a new draft of my soul. Then the rapacious howl of Eros and the salving of harsh mercy of beauty. And others too. Now I am sinking my line deeper into the murk. Deeper than the hunger for beating flesh. Deeper than the shudder of art's lingering glow. Now I am seeking my root. And this will be paralleled by probe for America's route. And so fiction shifts to participate in another penned voyage. Higher, thus deeper. Further out, thus further in. Deeper, thus vaster. From soul to system to cluster, vastness to vastest, and then more. Dearest heart, since those months ago I have discovered how alone I am. How alone I have been all these years since I knew you. Somehow this truth dwelt in a dark cave draped across my eyes. So this story begins then. You will see my ever-abiding love for you within it, because since you appeared in my life, you have been absent. Because since you appeared in my life, you have never been absent. And now when you are more gone than ever before, all of my days, all of my nights, the dreams I had these days in places of nightmares of old, are draped and swathed and sung in the mellifluous tones of your long-ago lovely ting spake raiment. 3. I know I am like the rain, there before the grace of you go I. Conjuring your specter, numinous one, as I first did planlessly one movie-going bookstore sitting afternoon, now more formally, and I realize a bright new thing or two oftener than ever. One cannot be bereft if he has known love. One cannot be reft if he has known love. So many years have I sought a full-fledged she to whom I may utter my words of adoration in obscurity. Incarnations sometimes appeared, ocean-vast ways of women who time did trickle to dream thin, trickle dry. Sometimes, though, femmes of the pen, inked pages, given curve and heat, named and loved. Yet I never loved so well a presence as I did an absence. Not because presence proved pathetic, but because absence invaded most all my love. So used did I become to romancing the indifferent, the unobtainable, the imagined, that presence has become a kind of interference, a 4. And you believe that, asks Americus? We tap shot glasses full of peppermint schnapps, swallow hard, drain mugs of stout, all of emotion. Why shouldn't I? I don't know, why should you? You interrupted my invocation of the numinous one. I interrupted your overlong prelude to the story.
I don't...
Hi, Jim.
How you doing,
Jim?
You all right?
I think you need to play a little music.
You have a ride home, Jim?
Play a little
music. I don't know about that.
Back in 1978. Called Joe and they're beaten up to a spaceship. What they do is they take a damn crowd and beam and they scare the numbers. The spaceship's not circular, they're not saucers, as most people feel. No. They rectangular shape, that's what's real. And you would not believe what happens when they take you up to these ships, man. What happens, simply put, they stick tubes in your veins, yeah. Blood comes spurting out like rain. But it's the way they find out about us. Taking all those goddamn secretions of us. But it don't matter, because no one will ever believe it. And if you tell the Air Force and the CIA, let's say you're a bunch of sheep.
Is that true story, Jim?
Enigmatic.
Back in 1978, I'll never report what I saw.
Are you the guy named Joe?
Look. Did any of this bugger? What I saw was not a flying saucer, any of that shit.
It was square.
It was rectangular, and then fucking light, and you have no idea, man. It was not rectangular, it was not a circle, it was rectangular. We saw it, it was there.
You and Bobby?
No, me and a friend. Alright, I know what it is.
Okay.
I'm not gonna put it. You like that little thing?
Oh, good, did he?
Mm-hmm.
recorded.